question.
It is a problem.
Ed, good morning. I will be arguing on behalf of both of the appellants, Mr. Pfluger and Pilaw 400. And I've asked to reserve 10 minutes and permit me a brief nostalgic moment. It's been many, many years since I've appeared in this courtroom to argue a case, and it's a pleasure and a privilege to be back again. And I think on behalf of the bar, most lawyers would agree that this should happen more often than not. And we're especially appreciative in this case because here we think we have a decision from the Fifth Circuit Circuit Court that is transformational in standing on its head a century and a half of Kuleana law, standing on its head traditional notions of burden of proof as it relates to establishing Kuleana principles, and us functionally overruling Henry versus Alo, the seminal case on access under Kuleana law. It's also transformational in the fact that the circuit court judge disregarded the relatively undisputed evidence presented by both experts in the case as to what the content of Kuleana law is, absolutely disregarded the vast majority of documentary evidence in the case, both conveyance documents and historical documents which were put into evidence on the issues of access and water allotment, and had drafted a findings of fact and conclusions of law, most of the findings of which were actually conclusions of law. So the decision is transformational in all those respects. I would just like to address four of the issues this morning, beginning with the indispensable party issue under Rule 19A, and then addressing access, water rights, and the trespass issue briefly. Joinder issue under Rule 19A. Apparently the argument is, and always has been, that a conversation between Teresa Tico, who at that time represented the Marvins in the case, had a conversation with Heidi Huddy Yamamoto, part of the Kamaaina Huddy family on Kauai, asking her to join a lawsuit. She declined. Under their construct of the law, that's enough to waive all 19A requirements to join indispensable parties, and that's enough to meet their burden of saying that they have met all the requirements of Rule 19A. There's a number of things wrong with that argument. Number one, there's no historical precedent for that view that you can waive 19A obligations by simply having a conversation. B, as the factual record will show, which was disingenuously set forth in the findings of fact in this case, the evidence is that Ms. Tico had a conversation with Heidi Yamamoto before the original complaint was filed. The original complaint concerned property damage from a mudslide that occurred by Mr. Pilaw, alleging that Mr. Pfluger was responsible for the property damage. That's it. That's the four corners of the original complaint. That, according to the testimony in that case, was the only discussion that occurred between Ms. Tico and Ms. Heidi Yamamoto concerning whether she would join the case in the original complaint.
Now, Mr. Pfluger could have moved to join her at any time, correct?
He could have, but the obligation is not on Mr. Pfluger under Rule 19A. Mr. Pfluger did, when the issue was first raised 9 months later, as a second or third afterthought on a second amended complaint. Mr. Pfluger met his obligations by bringing to the court's attention by reason of defense when the title Kuleana issues were first raised, hey, if you're going to raise these issues now in a second amended complaint, you got to join the other Kuleana parties who have a direct interest in the case. Understand that undisputed in this case by the expert witnesses, Mr. Graham and on their side, Dr. Andrade, both expert witnesses said that for Kuleana rights, once the Kuleana is established, if it is later subdivided or partitioned into separate lots, those parties have to allocate the Kuleana rights as between themselves. It's not the servient or Mr. Pfluger's responsibility, and by the way, he was not joined in the partition action. It is the Kuleana party's obligation to divide those allocation of rights and responsibilities as between themselves.
Is it your position then, Mr. McCorriston, that to for a court to adjudicate access, land or water access to Kuleana, it cannot do so unless all parties of the Kuleana are represented?
Absolutely. That is exactly our position.
And we have no case law on that, do we?
There is no case law on that, but the expert testimony was that way. There is some suggestion in, I know, Kipahulu case by dictum that should be the law. And I would say that common sense tells us that has to be the law, because Kuleana owners cannot create rights greater than the original grant of the Kuleana. In other words, if you and I are tenants in common in a Kuleana, we cannot create greater access rights or greater water rights than the Kuleana had at the time of the Mahele and the time of the original land grant. So all those rights have to be adjudicated. In this case, in the partition action, the petition order is silent as to how those rights are allocated. But as the undisputed testimony is concerned, and I'll rope back into this on the access issue, there are differences, different interests between the Huddies and between the Marvins as to these rights.
The Huddies were certainly aware of this action, even though it took different forms as it went along. They could have moved to intervene at any time, right?
The Huddies could have moved to intervene, but again, under Rule 19A, that's not their obligation. When asked that question in trial, Ms. Hari Yamamoto said she did contact Mr. Sherman Shiraishi to represent her those issues on those issues when she became aware of them, and told the court she did want to participate as a party in the case. And that issue was before Judge Watanabe, and she declined to order the proceedings stopped so that the proper party could be brought into the case.
Now, isn't the finding that there was no prejudice to the Huddies by failure to join a finding of fact that was not challenged and binding on this court?
It most definitely was challenged
on appeal
as a conclusion of law that there is no prejudice.
So that you say that's a conclusion of law. I agree with you. It doesn't matter where they put it. We have to treat a conclusion of law as one, whether it's in the finding or in the conclusion of law section. But
right.
In fact, prejudice is a question of law.
And that's endemic in the findings of fact. Most of them are indeed conclusions of law as we went through them. And let me get into the access issue so I can demonstrate the prejudice to the Huddies on the access issue. Wrote back into it that way. Remarkably, on the access issue, the expert testimony was in agreement. Either Dr. Andrade did not disagree with Mr. Graham on his direct testimony, and they certainly did not bring Dr. Andrade back to rebut Mr. Graham on any of these salient points. One, a Kuleana, even if partitioned, is only entitled to one access. If you later subdivide it or partition it into 2, 3, or 50, the servient parcel, meaning Mr. Fugas' parcel, does not have to provide each different partitioned or subservient or subdivided lot a separate access. That's been the law since Henry versus Allo, and that's what's been changed, and that's what prejudices the Huddies, as I will get
down to. How has that been changed?
Pardon me?
How has that been changed?
Because now there are two accesses to the Kuleana, one created by Judge Watanabe and a historical access by the trail which the Huddies use. May I demonstrate with an exhibit?
Sure.
All the Kamaaina witnesses testified. It is broke for them, the Huddies, for us, Mr. Fred Trotter, who was the irrigation manager for the plantation. Every single witness said the historical trail, which was the primary access to the Kuleana, which is called the Hyena Kuleana, before it was partitioned, came down a trail just before it was a road, came down a trail, looped down, these steep demarcations indicate a poly, came down the poly, and into the Huddy property. Ms. Sproat, who was a friend of the Huddies and whose family fished down there, said, that was the primary historical trail. One access, Kuleana law. That's the access. That's the historical access. By reason of Judge Watanabe's rulings, now we have two accesses. She's saying the Huddies are not prejudiced because they still can use the trail. And the Marvins now have a Sprout, the Huddies, Mr. Trotter, every single Kamaaina witness said, this road was created by a movie company for Frank Sinatra movie. It was not formerly a historic trail of any sort. It was brand new, created after the 1960s, has no historical basis. So now, by reason of Judge Watanabe's rulings, we have two accesses to the Haina-Kuleana, whereas before we only had one. That violates a century and a half of Kuleana law, which says you only can have one. Judge Watanabe, pick. The law says you pick the historical access. You can't create a second one if people subdivide or partition. That's what she did. So now we have a direct affront to Henry versus Alo. Now we have two accesses. To answer Judge Foley's question, what is the prejudice? We're never going to agree that there is a second access is allowed under Kuleana law. That's a taking. That's unprecedented under Kuleana law. So as this case moves on or goes back to the court, the Huddies should have a say of, if there's only one access allowed, where is it? To my lot, which is 1A, or to the Marvin's lot? Because you can't have two. Now, if I'm wrong and you want to reverse Henry versus Alo and change a century and a half of Kuleana law and say Judge Watanabe has a right and judicial province to create a second access to a Kuleana when it's partitioned or subdivided, then she's right. There is no prejudice. But if I'm right, if Henry versus Alo is still the law, and you cannot have two accesses, then what she did is essentially take the historical access from the Huddies, put it onto the Marvin's new movie road, which has no historical basis. Mr. Marvin testified in his case that if the access is relocated to the movie road, there is no way that he's going to allow the Huddies access through their lot to theirs. So how are the Huddies prejudiced? If I'm right, and Henry versus Alo is still the law, and if this is the one access allowed in Judge Huddy's order, the Huddies have no access.
So you're basically asking us to vacate and remand and order the court to join the Huddies.
That's one form of relief we are asking. Vacate the judgment or order a new trial, which would allow the Huddies to participate.
And if we were to do that, then all the other issues go away.
That's correct. That would be the logic of that ruling. So yeah, one way the prejudice, so if you're gonna create new law and allow two accesses, we're prejudiced because that's never been the law, meaning the survey and the Kluger interest. If you're gonna allow this access to be moved from the historical access to the Marvin access, where the Huddies say, quote, I am not because it impacts our property. They don't need access to our property. It comes right by my house. It creates dust and dirt the Huddies may have. Who knows? He couldn't even park in our yard and all the Huddies friends come down. These that they sent to go down fishing. They have a footpath and that's good enough for them.
Mr. McCorston, going back to the original question, if this was so important for Mr. Pfluger, why didn't you move to make the Huddies an indispensable party?
We raised it as a defense, and we told the judge.
Not in the Third Amendment answer, correct? Only at the verge of trial, correct?
Only after they raised the Kuleana issues for the first time in her Second Amendment complaint at 9 months after the original complaint was filed. There was no reason to raise that issue before the Kuleana issues were raised of an issue in a Second Amendment complaint.
I'm sorry, I haven't reviewed the answers. Did you include it in your Second Amendment answer or
Absolutely.
Third Amendment answer?
As soon as the issues were raised, we raised them as a defense, and we argued in response to the motion for summary judgment and every other dispositive motion that was raised that this was a problem, Judge Watanabe. We don't have an indispensable party here. So On the access issue, it's just unprecedented. Just one more comment. You've heard about three different paths, the center path, the west path, the east path, just to give you something.
Where is the Marvin house?
The Marvin, Marvin's had two houses, one here, Prince is here, Nix is here,
there is sufficient room on the Marvin property to allow access.
There is sufficient room, but they say it would impact their quality of life in the testimony that I cited, to have Huddy friends and fishermen and Huddy family go through there as a matter of right. And so when asked directly the question as to whether they would allow the same easement rights through their lot for the Huddies that they have by judicial decree that they're asking Judge Watanabe for, they said unequivocally no.
But Judge Watanabe did state that that issue is between the Marvins and the Huddies, did she not?
Doesn't that prove the point that they're indispensable in this discussion? And I agree. But they never did work it out. One last thing on access. As we point out in the papers, undisputed in this case, were the deeds. You're aware now that in 1965, the Haina Kuleana was partitioned by the Circuit Court of Kauai. There's nothing in the partition order. The partition was between tenants in common, two nurses from the mainland named Huntley and Hoopy, and the Huddy family. It was basically partitioned down the middle. The west side was the Marvins, the east side was the Huddies. There's nothing in the partition order saying anything about access or water rights. But all the subsequent deeds, there was an agreement of sale to sell to the present plaintiff's parents, Richard Nelson Jr. and Richard Marvin Jr. and Barbara Nelson. In the subsequent deeds, there is an exception that says there is no access to the Marvin lot to the government road. In the deeds from Barbara Nelson, the mother to the two children, there is an exception in the deeds. There is no access to the government roads. Completely ignored by Judge Watanabe. The expert testimony, the significance is that this is evidence of an allocation that the historical access did go to Lot 1A, which is the Huddies, and not to Lot B. Lot B was landlocked by the partition action. The parties recognized that in the deed, and therefore, the law is very clear. If you landlock a piece of property by subdivision or partition after the Maheli, that's not Mr. Pfluger or Pila'a's problem, which did not participate in the action. It's the allocation of burdens and responsibilities as between the Kuleana owners. And Mr. Graham testified as to that allocation, the parties were very clear. You look at all the Marvin deeds, they say there is no access to the government road. You look at the Huddy deeds, and the Huddy deeds all say all appurtenances, meaning access, water rights, and everything, are reserved to the by the grantor to the grantee for these rights. So if you look at the documents, which are completely ignored in the findings of fact and conclusions of law, it supports that the historical access to the Kuleana was the Huddies. After the partition, all the legal conveyance documents show that the access was reserved for Lot 1A, the Huddy lot, and not 1B, the Marvin lot. Completely discounted evidence by expert witnesses and documents, which Judge Watanabe just ignored. Okay, before I run out of time, where my orange light is on, I want to talk about water for a minute. Stipulation, this is a correct translation to the extent it can be read. You'll see there's some hookahs here where handwriting couldn't be read. Stipulated by the parties and accepted by Judge Watanabe is the description. Here is the original Haina Kuleana. The Mauka or Pali site is indicated here, the seaside is indicated here. The Ko'eli or the farmed part, Ko'eli. Translation means small, emphasize small. Land unit farmed by the tenant for the chief. That is indicated on the Huddy side of the Kuleana. And Kula, which everybody agreed to, means unirrigated look at the historical evidence, the only piece of evidence emanating from the Great Mahele as to whether or not there are water rights emanating from the western stream, from the Marvin side, there's absolutely no evidence of any irrigation from the west side streams or springs to the Marvin side. The only documentary evidence, the translation approved by stipulation, is there was no irrigated Coeli on the Marvin side. Undisputed. Expert witnesses, Kamaaina witnesses, largely the Huddies and Mr. Trotter. Mr. Trotter was the irrigation manager underlying irrigation for the plantation. He said during the times of the irrigation plantation, when he was irrigation manager, there were no ditches going from the western stream here. Undisputed testimony. He said if the ditch that the Marvin claims is old and ancient exists, it would have to have been created in the 1950s or after he left his position as irrigation manager. The Huddy said historically, Mr. Trotter said historically, all the Kamaaina witnesses said historically, without exception, all the water for the Coeli, which is the taro, came from a spring on the east side and a Y from the east side. Now it's dry, and in Judge Bhatnagar's order, she says, finds that significant. Well, if it's dry now, it must have been dry 150 years ago, which no evidence of. In fact, the evidence by the Kamaaina witnesses and historical documents are exactly the opposite. The west side was dry. But she says there is an old ditch. The only person who testified to the ditch was Mr. Marvin. Mr. Marvin is a California boy who grew up in Palos Verdes. It's not a Kamaaina witness. He said that it looked old to him. No Kamaaina witnesses testifying that this goes back to the Mahele. No other historical evidence that it goes back to. It's just an old ditch, and Judge Watanabe's finding as well is an old ditch, and water was running from the west side. It was mean. So the old ditch premise as to whether there were Kumeana rights of water allocation, it's not riparian. They originally said it was riparian, but a subsequent survey by them, they admitted their land does not go to the stream, it does not abut the streams, Cylinder, McBride, and Rapoon, there are no riparian rights. So they got the water by putting in a pipeline when they started to build their houses to the western stream. The Huddies testified that's the first time they got water from the western stream was through the pipeline created by the Marvins. There is also a spring on Mr. Pfluger's property, which was never mentioned in any document. There's no ditch from the spring to the Marvin property. What the Marvins did, they found the spring, they trespassed on Mr. Pfluger's property, they converted the spring into a catchment, and they ran a pipe from the spring here. There's no explanation. No possible explanation based upon the evidence of how they have any right to that spring water that traces back to the Mahele or traces back to anything before 1980 or 1970. So Judge Watanabe completely ignored that, completely was dismissive of our trespass claim because they trespassed on our property. I think at the time, until they did the survey, they thought it was on their property and that's why they did it. I don't want to be overly critical of the Marvins on this. I think they thought the spring was on their property, but it wasn't. After the survey, it wasn't on their property. After it was determined it wasn't on their property, they still maintain the spring, they still maintain the catchment, they still maintain the pipes, which are a continuing trespass. Judge Watanabe just dismissive of that, throws out our trespass claim, says they don't have to prove any witnesses that they're entitled by Kamaaina testimony or otherwise. And we're out of luck. Too bad, Mr. Fluger. So every single expert witness, including Dr. Andrade, says you have to go back to the Mahele to determine what the water rights are. Dr. Andrade and Mr. Graham, both expert witnesses, ignored by Judge Watanabe, said if you can't go back to the Mahele to show the water source and origins and use from the Mahele, you cannot claim Kulianu rights to water. They didn't do that. They didn't produce one Kama'aina witness. They didn't produce an archaeologist that said the ditch goes back to the Great Mahele. The ditch contradicts Mr. Trotter's testimony that says it wasn't there during plantation day, so it didn't go back to the Mahele. Contradicts the Putty testimony that no water came from the west, it all came from the east. I see my light is on, so I reserve my further remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Mr. Esser?
Good morning, Your Honors. First of all, I want to answer a couple of the questions raised by the court. The question that Judge McKenna asked about whether it was in what answer it was in the third amended answer, or answer to third amended complaint, Your Honor, which was raised for the first time, which was filed on June 12, 2006. And it's on page 16. And what it says is, 17th defense, plaintiffs have failed to name indispensable parties to the action. There's no word about the Huddies. And at the same time they filed this answer, they filed a motion to dismiss for lack of indispensable parties, citing Blue Water Sailing, which was a DBA for the Marvins. This had nothing to do with the Huddies. The Huddies weren't even contemplated. This idea of the Huddies was invented by them in a position statement, as pointed out by Judge McKenna, 4 days before the hearing. Now, they cite in the reply brief Haiku, which says Rule 19 can be raised at any time. But this was an ambush, and the judge commented about it being an ambush, both at the beginning of the August 9th hearing and at the end of the hearing. It wasn't raised in the answer. To the extent that it can be raised at any time under Haiku, I'll address that in a few minutes, but the representations that it was raised before are simply false.
Mr. Esser, I'd like to ask a procedural question. This final judgment apparently was rendered after a hearing that was apparently a hearing on a motion for summary judgment, a motion for preliminary injunction. And it appears that the findings and conclusions are one that would usually follow a trial. I'm assuming that everyone agreed that this would be a Rule 65C type of hearing where the trial was combined with.
Good question, Your Honor. And let me tell you why you have to ask it. There was a hearing on June 27th, 2006. They didn't request that for this appeal. It was a one-hour hearing where they, not only did they discuss the TRO and the judge affirmed the TRO in terms of the access in the water, they also discussed the evidentiary hearing issues, which of course didn't involve indispensable parties because they didn't raise that in their opposition papers. And they didn't request that transcript. That's not the only transcript that wasn't requested. They also didn't request a two-hour argument on October 19th, 2006, where this same lawyer made all his points to this judge. They decided you could decide this whole case without looking at the argument presented to the judge below. We raised a number of issues in our answering brief, attacking them for not raising issues below, so that October 19th transcript is crucial and it's not in the record. Ditto versus McCurdy says you're out. You've got to provide this court with a full record. They don't even answer those charges in the reply brief. They just blow them off. But much more important is the question. Well, I'm not saying your question's not important, Judge. But the other question asked by Judge Foley is the findings. Now, you know, sitting here and listening to, oh, it was only conclusions, or oh, we challenged the findings, or so on and so forth, is just, pardon me, nonsense. There were 159 findings by this judge. It is not a conclusion of law that Huddy did not want to participate. That is a conclusion of fact. It is not a conclusion of law that the defendants were not prejudiced by them not being a party. That's a question of fact. It is not a conclusion of law that Huddy was not prejudiced. It is not a conclusion of law that she was offered to join and refused. There's half a dozen findings in those 159 findings that address indispensable parties, even though it was raised very late in the process. Let me direct you to page 16 of the amended opening brief. And of course, the reason there's an amended opening brief is because Judge Foley signed an order for this court allowing them to amend their opening brief because it did not comply with Rule 28B4. And when they filed an amended opening brief, it still didn't comply with B4. This is what they say on page 16. This is the Rule 19 argument. The circuit court also made specific findings that, and they cite finding 102, not a conclusion of law, 102. these findings are absolutely contrary to the evidence. I'm sorry, but that doesn't challenge anything having to do with a conclusion of law. That's a challenge of fact. There are numerous other places in the brief. Page 22, they contest finding of fact number 58. They don't do that in their, and they don't quote it, and they don't challenge it in their points. Page 23, they contest finding 13. Again, don't challenge it in their points. They contest 13, 79, 77, 102, all the way through the brief, which was possibly not written by the gentleman sitting here. They contest findings of fact, and they don't do it in their findings. Now, the cases are clear. Bremer and a bunch of other cases say, you don't challenge the findings. They are binding on this court.
You would concede, Mr. Esser, that some of those findings of fact may, in fact, be conclusions of law.
And to the extent they are, they should also be challenged, Your Honor. There is also authority that says if you don't challenge a conclusion of law, it's binding on this court. Now, there is one conclusion of law. I can't cite you authority, but I'd be happy to supply it afterwards. A conclusion of law, just like any other order, has to be challenged. Now, let me tell you something else that's not in the points. You asked if this was a combined Rule 65, Rule 56 proceeding. It certainly was. You can look in the points of error from all three pages, and you will never see a word about injunctive relief. This whole case was about an injunction to tell James Pfluger to stop harassing these people. And yet, in the points, they never, ever mention the injunction. They don't say it was wrong. They don't ask that it be set aside. They attack the summary judgment motion completely. They say nothing about injunctive relief. It's not in the conclusion of their opening brief either. So, and the points have other problems. There are two issues. He pointed out an unconstitutional taking. The only problem with that is he didn't raise it below and he didn't raise it in his points. In his brief, he challenges quantities of water. That was not put in the points and that was not raised below. You simply can't come in front of a court with inadequate transcripts and inadequate points and raise all these arguments on findings of fact, call them conclusions of law, and still not challenge them and expect to reverse the case. Now, I want to say generally where this case came from, and I realize there's a lot of technicalities and I'm going to try and get to them all. In November 2001, a massive mudslide occurred at Pila'a Bay. That mudslide destroyed reefs and beaches and a beachfront home. It resulted in millions of dollars of fines and felonies. My clients had lived in that house for 36 years when that mudslide happened, with no problems with access and no problems with water. The water supply that he's talking about here was 30 years old when it was attacked by his client. It was 30 years old when they called up the state permitting authority and tried to rat on the Marvins for putting in a little tiny water collection system without getting a permit, which of course does not affect 7.1 rights, but whatever. None of this happened for 30 years. It happened after 2002, when my clients had the temerity to sue this gentleman for damages for almost destroying their house.
It's pretty clear in the briefs and the record, but did Judge Watanabe order a second land access to the Kuleana?
No, she did not. And in fact, if you look at what Bruce Graham testified, he wasn't talking about the Pali Road. He was talking about Route Number 2. They came in with an engineer, Mr. Lee, and they said, hey, it's got to be Route Number 3. By the way, nobody ever used Route Number 3 because it was never even described or investigated by an engineer. Sorry. Until a couple of months before this trial. Route Number 3 was never used. Part of Route Number 3 was used for 18 months just for a mudslide. It came over here, down to the shore, and instead of going to the bluff, which is where all the access was for centuries, it went down to the ocean, went along the ocean.
What do the Huddies use now?
The Huddies use a stairway, although this other map.
Is that stairway also used by fishermen?
I'm sorry?
Is that stairway used by fishermen?
Boy, the testimony about the fishermen came from Sproat, and I think the judge found that it is, as I recall. Another finding of fact that wasn't challenged. But that stairway comes down off of about two-thirds of the way, sorry,
When the Pflugers challenged based on indispensable party, did they challenge based on the Huddies being prejudiced or themselves being prejudiced?
They eventually argued in their opening brief twice. I'm sorry, both. Both are covered by Masuda. And by the way, Masuda is clear authority that if they don't file a motion under Rule 19, either the party complaining or the Huddies, that is a definite factor in terms of deciding 19B. It is not irrelevant. It's entirely relevant. 19B is an equitable decision that if you have a party who doesn't want to participate, and first she says, Heidi Huddy, she doesn't want to participate. Then she shows up and says she wants to but doesn't file a motion. Then the assumption is 19B is what we're here to discuss, which is what do you do if you have an indispensable party and you can't get them in? If that happens, then the judge decides various things. And one of the things she decides is whether or not the party filed a motion, whether or not the party knew about it, whether or not the party appears and testifies. The only real benefit that they get from...
How did the Huddies access their land?
Well, let me just back up a bit. They access right now, as far as I know, two-thirds of the way down the Poly Road by a stairway that Mr. Pfluger put in after the mudslide. Okay, so it's a short distance from here. The only time in history they ever had vehicular access to the Huddy site, this is down here, this is the name, they walk over here. The only time they ever had vehicular access is from 2000 to 2001, just for the mudslide, and that route went down the beach. That was it. Ever since, all the testimony, Sproat, Heidi, everyone, Trotter, says that the access to the Hanna Kuleana, in other words, both properties, is down either two or one. It was never three. And it was never vehicular. The Huddies for generations hiked down from the top. So what they're complaining about is a stretch that's about 100 feet past their stairway, that where the Frank Sinatra Road goes. But the discussion at trial wasn't about the Poly Road. The discussion at trial was about two, and it was about all these obstructions put in here, a lock gate and tractors and bulls and outhouses to block this after the Marvin sued them for the damage to the house in 2002. And his desire to put a road over here on the edge of his property, which was not an all-weather road, took four-wheel drive, and was twice as far. That was the debate, whether to go here or there. That's the debate in Bremer. That's the debate in Paloma. Access assumed. Where does it go? Who decides? Graham said,
so there's only one access today.
There's only one access. What's this multiple access? Everybody, for generations, has gone down that. This is right here. Right here. And nobody said anything. Nobody said anything until after the mudslide. Suddenly, the Marvins are stealing my water, which he never used.
So with regards to Mr. McCorston's other exhibit, where he points out two accesses, one to the Marvin property and one to the Huddy, that's not correct?
Well, again, the primary access we're talking about to make these houses livable,
okay,
is from this highway to this bluff.
Correct.
Okay? Can you point that out on there?
Yes. The thing is that the reason I put that up there.
When you say primary, it suggests a second.
It's a much closer. This shows the last 100 feet. This is not what this battle is about. What the battle is about is Route 2. How do you access from the highway? These parties used their land for 10 years without the Frank Sinatra Road when it was overrun. They just hiked down from the bluff. And even now, as you can see clearly on this map, Heidi's tenant, she doesn't live there, by the way, and she never has. Heidi's tenant goes down the Poly Road,
okay,
which is therefore the same route, except for this little stretch here, which is about 100 feet. This is the so-called multiple access, because there's this and that.
So that is used for a road?
This
that
is
black
used
line?
For vehicular traffic.
Okay, no, but the black line is not for vehicular traffic.
No, that's a stairway.
That's a footpath.
Okay, that's a footpath, also used by fishermen.
But this emphasis on the Pauley Road is false. The debate was over 2 versus 3. That's what the debate was about.
Okay.
Now, the question of whether or not the Pauley Road was there at the Great Mahaley, and of course, as they also argue, there's no evidence that Route 2 was used at the Great Mahaley. I mean, they make that argument across the board that we didn't come in with any ancient testimony. I went through the cases both for water rights and access and said, come on. The Great Mahaley was in 1848. The Kuleana ruling was in 1850. How are you going to have people testify as to circumstances that were happening then? They said, you got to have an archaeologist. They didn't call one. Look at the water debate. They said, oh, Trotter and Heidi said, oh, the water was on the east side. We said, it's on the west side. Look, it's there right now. Judge went down, by the way, and observed the property, looked at the ditches. There's a debate, east side, west side. They didn't call any archaeologist to say, oh, the east side is ancient. And there's no Hawaii case that says you need archaeological testimony. Also, this suggestion, by the way, that my client's testimony is no good because it's not Kamaaina, is quasi-racist as far as I'm concerned. This isn't a battle between Hawaiians. This is a battle between a Ahupua'a rich landowner who wants to harass his kuleana, not just my client, but many others testified at the trial. There are 20 kuleanas on this property. And at various times, Mr. Pfluger and his bulldozer, again, this shows a very close-up battle. That's not what the battle was. This is Mr. Andrade testified, and he's an expert in kuleana. And he has 2 kuleanas that he couldn't access. He describes a bizarre incident when Judge Nakea came to the property in a previous suit, where James Pfluger gets in his bulldozer and wipes out the road right in front of the judge. So there's been battles. There's been battles over this route for quite some time.
Can you just show where the kuleana is, just generally,
yes,
with your finger?
Okay. This is what we call the plateau. Okay. And this is the Marvin property.
Okay.
This is Hannah Kuleana, which is 2/3 Marvin, 1/3 Huddy.
Yes.
This stretches it out quite a bit. This is not the scale. Okay, this stretches it way out. But it does show generally 1A and 1B. So what they're saying is the reason the judge's ruling was wrong is because of this right here. And they want to throw the baby out of the bathroom. They want to also throw, they also, and by the way, Graham argued that somehow there was multiple access on the second route. Well, obviously, each person in the house uses that route. What if you have a baby and they grow up to be a teenager and they start walking down that route? Is that a multiple use of the access road? And the judge didn't grant exclusive use to anyone. The judge granted non-exclusive use of 2.
So there's no additional access to the property other than 2? Is that what you're suggesting? Because what Mr. McCorston has argued before the court was that 2 was the existing access to the property.
Correct.
But that Judge Watanabe had created, which is the exhibit behind you, a second access to the Marvin property.
Yeah, well, that's changing things. What he argued below was that there's no evidence that 2 is historical. Kalaina said that there was 2 back at the time of the Great Valley. They haven't proved anything. They don't get easement anywhere. They don't get anything. They didn't just argue, oh, there's a little problem down here. The attack was here. They also argued that, assuming there's right of access, why can't he make them go over here so he can plant neem trees and have cattle and all that? So the battle was, number one, they have no right to an easement at all because they didn't prove that this is an historical route. They just went back 50 years. Number two, if there is access right, then 3 is better. And Palama and Gramercy, of course, it's not because it's not all weather.
So your argument is that because Mr. McCorston didn't make the argument below, he's foreclosed.
That's true in many cases. Yes, that's correct. And of course, we don't know exactly what argument he made below except by looking at his papers because he didn't bother to supply the court with a transcript of his of his argument.
But if Judge Watanabe was in error, hypothetically, in error in terms of creating a second access, wouldn't that create a prejudice to perhaps the Huddies, and therefore make the Huddies indispensable parties?
Well, the judge found as a matter of fact, Your Honor, that they were invited and they refused. Okay? That's one fact. Number two, they are not prejudiced. Number three, Pfluger's not prejudiced. There are more findings. Let's see. That she found as a matter of fact that the Huddies have better access now than they had before the flood. She found, as a matter of fact, that they have irrigation water. The request that Huddy made on the stand for potable water and vehicular access, again, she never had potable water. Her tenant had a roof thing, and she never, and her father, Bill, contributed material to the building of the PVC waterway, and the water was split between the two of them. And when the muds, this is for agricultural water, that's not potable water, that's from the stream, and it lays right in the ditch. And by the way, there are cases that say that a ditch is not an unnatural waterway, it is a natural waterway. And if you lay PVC into the same ditch, which the judge went and saw, it's not unnatural, it's not a well, it's not an artificial water supply, it's simply a delivery system.
The Huddies never had any vehicular access?
I'm sorry?
The Huddies never had vehicular access.
They had it for 18 months from 2000 to November 2001.
Okay.
When that beachfront road was in. And because that it came from the other side, the Huddy access wasn't across their yard. What he's trying to do now is to use the Pally Road for the Huddies, he meaning Lee and Pfluger, and bring it back across their yard. The access to, again, I apologize for going back and forth, but the access to here for 18 months in 2000 came from this side. You can see this is the road up to their property. This is where 3 was for 18 months. And what the Martins did is have to go this over to their property. So Huddies weren't crossing their property in 2000. This proposal to cross their property never existed in history.
You know, we're continually talking about the Huddies.
Yes.
Wouldn't it have been a good idea to have joined them below?
Again, this wasn't even raised until 4 days before trial.
You didn't have to wait for him to raise it, did you?
That's true. The judge specifically, and again, the judge found 4 times in her findings that the Huddies did not want to participate.
She could have still ordered them, right?
Yes, although that's what 19B is about. She can't make them come to court. And frankly, what would happen if this court reversed on indispensable parties and it went back down and she said, I don't want to do it, which is exactly what the judge found she did before. Where are we again? Do we cancel the whole thing because they won't participate? If they won't participate, and again, the cases cited by them, Masuda and Carbonell, all those cases, none of them involve a person who actually declined to participate.
But there's a difference from Marvin's attorney approaching them and a judge ordering them, wouldn't you say?
Well, the judge cannot order them.
Well, 19A is very clear. The judge could have ordered.
You mean make them be a party?
Yes.
I stand corrected. So you're saying if you remand, we can order them to appear?
Or order them to be a party. You can make them a defendant or
again,
an involuntary plaintiff.
If you take the position that 19A requires a party, and 19B is if that party doesn't make themselves available, and in this case she actually testified, 19B makes it an equitable decision reviewable by abuse of discretion as to whether or not it affects the case. And the findings of fact in this case said it did. And even if they challenged them in their points, which they didn't, they were not clearly erroneous. This statement that he's making about the timing and the attorney and the nature of the conversation, that's not in the findings. There's no evidence that the reason that they did, she didn't participate is because she didn't like Terry Tico. That's not anywhere testified to. She didn't say that at trial. That's just stuff made up for the opening brief.
Would you disagree, Mr. Esser, as a policy matter, if the access, land, and water rights to Kuleana is at issue in a court, that all those with an interest within the Kuleana should be made a part of that proceeding? It's a policy matter. Do you think that would be a bad policy?
I don't think it's a bad policy, but there's certainly no Hawaii authority that says that. And again, for whatever reason, the Huddies decided not to sue James Pfluger. They had some damage on their property, and they lost access for quite a bit of time, and they don't live there. So they didn't get attacked by Pfluger. Pfluger built them a new stairway. Pfluger gave them irrigation water. He didn't do that for the Marvins. They had reasons not to get involved. They were working with him. They, by the way, also had reasons to come in and try and sabotage this case with a Rule 19 defense. She didn't have any reason to come and do that without requesting permission to get involved in the case. There is no Hawaii case that says that if you have a multiple members of a kuleana, that you have to have all the owners of the kuleana.
If you have a kuleana partition and the access is at one part and the partition divides the kuleana in half, can that cut off the access?
It wasn't in half. It was two-thirds, one-third. And the testimony of Bruce... Okay, quiet. The testimony of Bruce Graham is that partition does not affect kuleana rights. None.
If you had part A and part B,
yes,
of kuleana, this is a hypothetical. It's drawn,
yes,
in half.
Okay.
The historical access is to A.
Yes.
It ends in A.
Yes.
What happens to B?
The historical access is exactly the same in this case.
So B...
They both go down Route 2.
So B would be able to cross A to the access?
Well, that wasn't disputed in this case, okay?
I mean, the way we decide this case may affect another kuleana.
The judge found that it would not prejudice the Huddies. That finding was not contested in the opening brief. It is a finding of fact.
So you don't want to talk about hypotheticals?
No, I understand where you're coming from, Your Honor, but the difficulty I have is the circumstances of this case, and that's what Carbonell says they're supposed to look at. She did not sue Pfluger for damages from the flood. She was not an adversary. She has played along with Pfluger. Every witness that testified for Pfluger was either an employee or somebody that was on his payroll, and the Huddies got a free stairway and irrigation water. It was clear what was going on here. And the judge said, I'm not gonna make the Marvins drag in somebody who's refused to join this litigation. That's a fair ruling under Rule 19B. And you know, frankly, I think what happened in this indispensable party thing, and it's the number one argument in the OB and the number one argument in the reply, is that they don't have any arguments on the Kuleana issues, and they're trying to get a technical reversal to send these parties back to court and rehash the whole thing. He's got unlimited attorney's fees. He's got lawyers coming out of his ears.
Okay,
this is a lower middle class family, counsel, that would struggle if there was a remand, and it would be precisely the same evidence. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Finding of fact 108. Traditional road extended partway down the bluff to a plateau with ironwood trees. This is where these people parked their cars. From the plateau, there were three trails down to the beach. One on the Hanalei side, one over the tip of the hill, straight out to the ocean, and another trail on the Kapa'a side. There was never a road to the Huddy House. I'm wondering, is that depicted there where they would park and go down the trail, or is that way up somewhere else?
It is somewhat off. The Pali Road is, according to the people who know, this is somewhere over about here, and this is not to scale.
Okay.
So this shows the last, I'd say, half.
So that area where people would park, and the trails referenced here is not that one of those.
Well, there was testimony that there was a path in the same place as where the road was. There was testimony that there was a prior road. There was testimony that there was not. It was all over the map. There was a lot of testimony about where they went. And to a certain extent, it was impossible for the court to figure out where they went in 1850. How would they know that?
So the Marvins, to get to their property, they go on two also?
Everyone goes on two at this moment, yes.
Everyone goes on two?
Yes, to the plateau, everyone goes on two, and then the Huddies proceed down the road, not by car, but by walking. And again, the Huddies don't use the U, they don't live there, they rent it.
So the Marvins don't have to cross onto the Huddies' property?
No. No, they go down, their driveway ends on their property.
So the people, the renters of the Huddies' property park at the top of that trail?
That's correct. Which they have for 40 years. The Huddies have never lived there. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you very much.
Mr. McCorriston, rebuttal.
First, I'm going to give Mr. Esser prospective absolution for misciting the facts in this case because he was not at the trial. And a lot of what he said simply not supported by the record whatsoever, including Mr. Graham's testimony, which was exactly the opposite of what he said. Mr. Graham said there was one historical access and it's a footpath to the Huddy House. 823-2006 transcript that 11 to 12 and from 823 transcript that 17:21-23 very definitely testified that the historical access was to the Huddy House. It was only a footpath. Everybody walked by foot. That was the Miami Trail. Every witness has said there was no trail to the Marvin House where the existing movie road was built. It was built afresh from a Howe tree forest in the 1950s or 60s. Never a historical trail there before. Every single witness has struck everybody else. The movie road the Marvins are now using and ordered by Judge Watanabe was never there. Historically, Judge McKenna is correct. Witness testimony was there's three trails. The predominant trail is being the one that led to the Huddy House. It branched out, and the fishermen used a second trail on this side to go fishing. There was a third trail on the Hunley side, which did not go into the Marvin property, but it did go down to the ocean. So there's three trails, but the historic trail to the Kuleana, without exception from any witnesses, was the footpath to the Huddy House, which after one slide wasn't proved by Mr. Fluger. It's absolutely wrong. This case started as purely a property damage one slide case. That's all that Ms. Huddy talked to Ms. Tikuo about. I may be wrong whether it was a second or third amendment complaint when for the first time they raised the Scuoliana issues, but whatever it was, we did raise the indispensable party issue. Thank you for reminding me. We even filed a motion to dismiss. So for them to say, we raised it at the last minute, they waited a year. Their original complaint by Ms. Tico was only as to property damage. They didn't bring the Kuleana issue still way back when. And they say, of course, they waited to the end of the day to object under Rule 19. Well, they didn't plead it to the end of the day. So how could I object to it before it was put? Yeah, absolutely wrong. The entire testimony he has wrong. Path to the Marvin's house was created. It's a modern creation. The Marvin's trespass created, didn't have a permit to create it. Everybody parked at the top of the plateau, which is up here. This was a foot trail before the Marvin's built and the movie company built the road. By the way, the road was reclaimed by the Howe Forest that had been there before the movie company laid the road. Their own witness testified to that. Then without permission, Mr. Marvin, without permits, cleared out the house, which not only had his property down here, but all the way to up here to build that road. It's a modern artifice that has no historical nexus. The Huddies still use this trail. Now there are two accesses. The historical access, which is the footpath and the trail, and the new one created by Judge Watanabe. I don't care how many raindrops you
Where is the footpath that the fishermen use?
The footpath
here's the plateau where everybody parks. This used to be a trail before the moving company cut it into, and the Marvins recut it into a road. From this point, the Huddies walked. The Huddies' grandparents did live there. He's absolutely wrong, but again, forgive him because he wasn't there at trial. The Huddy grandparents did live there. Heidi Huddy did not live there. That's correct. She rented, but it, when the Huddies were living there, when they were renting there, they parked at the top of the plateau and walked down the historical trail to the Hyena.
And that's what the fishermen also use.
And by the way, before you criticize, of course, and this coming in this too late with these Rule 19 arguments, the original pleading in this case said that the Marvin property, Lot 1B, was a standalone kuneana. That was the representation in the original complaint filed. It wasn't later, much later, about the time of the second or third amendment complaint, that we decided that this discovered that this lot was actually part, did not have the status of a kuleana, but was part of a kuleana that had been partitioned in 1965. So before you blame a Horstin too much, you look at your own pleadings, look at your allegations, which didn't comport to Rule 11 when you called the Marvin lot a kuleana, and look to your own actions. This was a property damage case to the end of the day. One last thing before I leave here. Route 2 or Route 3, it is true that there was interchangeable use between Route 2 and Route 3. And But the eastern route that was used for several months before the mudslide that we're talking about, the parties had actually come to an agreement that we would have in meeting with Mr. Pfluger and the Marvins and the Huddies, that a road would be cut underneath the poly here, and that road would be used, actually go through the Huddy parcel, then back into the Pfluger parcel, then eventually to the Marvin road. The Huddies were going to allow the Marvins to use that road. That was going to be the allocation of kuleana rights. That would have conformed with the historic rule that there would only be one access to the kuleana, and both parties would have been allowed to. Much like ruined that, the deal was off. That's why that road was not used. That's why we went back to number two and number one, the middle road. Mr. Pfluger's contention is he is unfairly burdened, as well as the Huddies, and you create a second road. You're changing the kuleana law. You're saying that the original Hyena Kuleana has two access points, not one. Choose, Judge Watanabe. You should have a certain amount of discretion to reallocate a route. You do have a kuleana law, but you can't create more than one. That's what we're saying. And if you're going to change the route, you got to take care of both sides of that when the historic route was on the Huddy side. You can't do it without the Huddy.
Is your client truly substantially prejudiced if the walking trail is also being used by others?
Yes. Why? We're the only one in Hawaii that has a kuleana rule specifically constructed for James Pfluger, because James Pfluger is some sort of ogre that, unlike everybody else in Hawaii, all the kuleana on his property get two access rights where everybody else in Hawaii only has to have one.
Judge Watanabe did not find or conclude that the Huddies are entitled to access their lot through that walking trail.
She did, implicitly. She said they're not prejudiced because they can still walk down this path. So how is that? I mean, and you can't have it both ways. If her conclusion is that they're not prejudiced because they still can walk down this path, that means she's recognizing it as an access.
So, Mr. McCarson, let me ask you this.
If she's saying no, she relocated this to over here and didn't provide the Huddies with any access, and the Marvins testified on their oath they wouldn't let them go through the lot, what is she doing to the Huddies?
But Mr. McCarson, if the walk path goes to Lot 1A and Lot 1B has no access to, isn't Lot B then landlocked?
Yes.
And they need an access?
It's landlocked, and the law is, Mr. Graham and the case law holds, and the Okitohulu case holds, if you have access to a historical kuleana piece, and you choose on your
determine access, but you can't come back to the subservient landowner, Mr. Pfluger, and say, okay, if I'm a developer and I want to subdivide this to 5, 10, or 50 lots, Mr. Pfluger has to provide 5, 10, 50 access routes. The law is very clear that that's not the law. You're entitled to one. The Juliana property owners, if they're tenants in commons or later subdivided or later partitioned, they have to decide between themselves. But until that time that they decide between themselves, it's the historic access, which is the legitimate and legal site. The Huddy site is still a historic access. In Judge Watanabe's decision, it was not taken away from them. There's no language in this judgment that says, I take away the Huddy footpath as a legal right of access to the Hyena Juliana. In fact, she says the Huddies are not prejudiced because they can continue on life as before. That's subsumed for thought that they still can use it. And I'll create a new one, the superhighway for the Californians, which has no historical basis, so that they can have their own access. And tough luck for Mr. Pfluger. You're the only one in the state of Hawaii that is subject to this new rule that emanates from the First Circuit, contrary to Henry versus Alo, that Juliana has multiple rights. One last word. On the ditch that supposedly comes from the western stream, that they say the logical conclusion is that the ditch was used to irrigate the Kohele. This is a topographical map. Among the many unusual things that Judge Watanabe did, she repealed the law of gravity because of the location of the ditch, and there was no evidence as to where the terminus of ditch was. I'm assuming it did go to the Terrell part over here. It would have to run uphill.
Thank you, Mr. McCorsa. Thank you, counsel. Take it under advisement.